interrupting the current neo-Ukrainian climate-challenged, behaviorally-controlled, energy-starved, alien-invaded, nuclear-glowing, pustulated cricketism to bring you behind the woodshed. This is Cricketude-Busting episode BTWRLM 669. And remember, being free is not a spectator sport, so get you behind the woodshed and bring those miscreants with you and do what you need to do. This is the time that we have to do it. I've been saying this for over a decade. Don't know each one of you, so don't know what gets your liver in a quiver, but that's what it's going to take, something that gets you impassioned to do something to stop the nonsense that you see. There's those that would say don't do anything, and from what I can tell, that's not going to work either. So I don't really have all the answer. Sometimes you do have to do nothing, and you do have to pick your battles, but you do have to pick. It's not a spectator sport. And one of the things you have to pick, I would hope, and to support this broadcast and this network. Again, donation season, going to ask here regularly because of the need. It's increasing, and we need more. I haven't even checked with Sound to see what came in from last week's request. I hope you all went right to the donation buttons on realibertymedia.com and clicked your flavor, whether it's a big good cash donation, whether it's a coffee, or get in with Sound Minds and set up a slot for a content hour or two or a half. And commit. Don't just think you're going to do a one-off. Come up and try to make it every week. Give people something to listen to. Bring your brilliance, if you will, to what you've done, what you've seen. And I would hope that it's right on and people can really learn. And it really doesn't have to, from my perspective, there is no politics to what we have to get done. It might be looked on as politics because that's our society and government or not. But this is how people, societies are ruled, whether they want to be or not. And we have a good foundation in the United States of America, but it's been contorted. And we'll maybe touch a little bit about how that's working. And a lot of it's the subversion of the original establishment. Not that everything was perfect, but it had a lot of right things the first year after, where they made the amendments to the Constitution to say, oh, wait a minute, we better give the people enumerated rights, otherwise the government's just going to run everybody down. That's what they do. And so we have this precarious position that we need to be, but back to RLM, same thing. We have to pay the bills, and there's bills, and there's, as I said last week, hardware that needs to be recovered right now and continue to be. And I kind of glossed over something. I said, well, I made it through to be able to broadcast. That wasn't a slight to two very important people that allowed that. That had it not been for Vince Easley, yes, I said it, Easley, Vince, I would have stopped broadcasting years ago. And as I thought that through, there's no guarantee about it, but being that I was instrumental at the last week of salvaging RLM, it was going to go down with no bills paid, no registration, no nothing. Everything was being lost, and not all the information was had. I got to see that last week in everybody that could have an input, in particular Sound Minds and a couple of other people behind the scenes doing the coding or the understanding the system. We had to pull from everywhere to find the information to save Real Liberty Media. It was lost. It had gotten too late, and I never asked for a lot of information from Grimner. In fact, I said I did not want to run and help run a network, not because I didn't want to help, but I had just come off of Republic Broadcasting right before I went to Oracle, and that was a year of every day watching, you know, players run, essentially, as those hosts in that network walked away. And so I had spent a year of trauma, if you will, and I only sympathies to Sound Minds. I'm asking him not to do that to himself, and I think he's doing a good job to stay away, but it wasn't for Vince allowing me, generously providing the phone and a data plan, I would have stopped broadcasting years ago. So when I said last week, I made it through, it wasn't without help. And so Vince is the first one. He was able to decide to come forward and was able to do it for a time for a couple of years. And then in that break relative to going to RLM, that's when Sound Minds picked it up. And without his contribution, you would not have heard my voice. So there's an interesting behind-the-scenes story. If Vince hadn't got me to continue, I wouldn't have had been on the phone calls or the emails to try and figure out could we salvage Real Liberty Media at all. And the white elephant would have went to the boneyard, the big pachydermy boneyard there, and it would have been over. Someone would have picked up the domain, and it would have been something else. And so a lot of credit to Vince to allow me to be continuing. He found value in what I've been saying. He went as far as he could, and then to Sound Mind's credit, Sound Mind's provided a phone and a package that allows me to get the data to send to be able to communicate with you. Otherwise, for me, it was over. RLM was, like I said, there was just a week. I don't even know how we pulled it off, to tell you the truth. The little bits of information that I had was instrumental in some parts, was the people, like Sound Mind's, digging into the system and finding other registrars and what was going on, and there was, everything was really failing right before our eyes. And it was, if it wasn't for Sound being there to do all that, RLM would be dead. So Sound is a critical part to what we see today, and I would hope you would reward him, at least him. If you don't find my content worthy, reward him and maybe help to bring what, again, Grimner, his white elephant, euphemistically called the white elephant, he thought it was a place to bring people of disparaging ideas together and talk and work things out. And I have the greatest admiration for that and what he pulled together all by his little lonesome. And again, I just couldn't do more of that administrative side. I'd already just come off of that. I needed to cool down a bit. Again, he gave me some information. I happened to grab some information that came along that he wanted me to have. Not that it was meant to. It was years and years and years ago. And all those little pieces of information from everybody looking at the last bit salvaged Real Liberty Media, again, to Sound Mind's great credit. And he's been throwing in a lot of his own investment. And this, the broadcast is, my broadcast is because of him right now, relative to getting the data and the, to get the content to be able to give you the broadcast. So if you would please, in your heart, donate to realibertymedia.com. I know it's been a little bit of time, but like I said, it was near death. It was on death's door. There was no doubt in my mind. I told Sound one time, I said, you know, we have 2 days. If we don't get two answers in 2 days, within the 2 days, we're done. We're dead in the water and we can't solve it. And within 2 days, we had the information we needed. And boy, it was a, talk about clawing ourselves back to the top of the cliff, because it wasn't over then. It just gave us the ability to start piecing together all the things that needed. And we didn't really salvage everything, but we salvaged enough and the important parts. And that's why there was this big change. So I'm saying a whole lot more than maybe I thought to say. I just want you to know there's a lot of work, a lot of people dedicated to keep at least reallibertymedia.com going, to keep me, my word out. I would hope that I'm a bit of an inspiration, if nothing else, to, even if you argue with me. Right? Cracker over at BitChute. Contact Sound Minds and get a slot. Tell us what you know. Tell us what you think. Tell everybody how I got it wrong. And that was the other thing that was interesting. William Roberts was over at the very first, my first network, and he eventually drags me over to Oracle, and we were able to play between Republic Broadcasting and Revolution Broadcasting, the first network, on Oracle. And when he would talk every day he'd do a broadcast, I'd come in the weekend, because at that time I was going to go into mine, and remember, I was going to be gone, and I could only do a few days. And so I adjusted my schedule ahead of time. And when I heard him talking on the week, he gave you the nuts and bolts, the encyclopedic read it and understand what's going on in his history and what was going on. And I would come in on the weekend referring, not all the time, when I heard something that was relevant to what I was going to come up with, I would incorporate his work. And so in that, that's why I enjoyed a network. You can work from other hosts' work, and you can pull together a contextual, historical view. And what I brought to the table was, he was explaining the fundamental encyclopedic view of how we got here. And I was saying, this is what they're doing with that, and this is how you address it. These are the nuts and bolts of how we get through it today. And I was just, as I think that through, then Sound Mind told me he found a lot of William Roberts' old broadcasts, and I think he's made a dedicated channel for that at Real Liberty Media. So maybe you can thank Sound Mind's for that. Donate to William Roberts' work. And you'll hear, I think you'll hear the old stuff. It's all the same. See, it's all continuing. You'll be able to hear what words I use in Roberts, William Roberts' stuff. It's not different. It's just a contextual thing. It's a historical thing. I would say, this is what you do with that information. And I had lots of people then that had appreciated being able to hear both sides of that. And so if you have that, or you have a contrary opinion, let's bring it to the network. In the meantime, we do need donations, cash donations, whether or coffee. Again, this network actually runs about 24/7. There's somebody on it doing something somewhere in the world, actually. Pretty fun. Yeah, pretty interesting. And then we have the other thing that the internet itself is changing on us, and we're trying to figure out how to be absorbed by it, like we had Matrix is not a movie. Can we be that in the sewers of the internet without having to be regulated by those that want to track and trace and copy our stuff and threaten us and malware us and whatever all else? A lot of that's on each one of us, and that's really the idea. Each one of us that takes responsibility, and Real Liberty Media becomes a place where you touch to go and reach others that you choose to go out. And no one really knows how to track that through if it's all done correctly. So that's still being built as well, notwithstanding all the hardships that have been coming down. SoundMind has it up to where he has it. We have hardware that has failed. He got that. He had those stored and ready to go, essentially for the same purpose, but now they need to be replaced. And some other things. There's always cables going out, and I understand we have some battery backups that would like to be had so that we can keep some of these machines running when there's power outages, and that is a real thing when you're doing your own service and servers. Again, a hybrid system. Some of it's out somewhere in the world, and some of it's in basements, if you will, bedrooms. That's all closets that's running and needs to be backed up. Sounds like we may be needing a generator, automatic generator system in the future. It'd be nice now, but if we don't have it right now because there's just not enough, that's okay. We wait. But we're looking toward all that to keep this thing really flying. You hear about a data center keeping up 99%. That's what we're trying to do. That's what we kind of have to do if you're going to be a network. So again, please donate what you can. If you can't, thank you very much for turning in. Tell others. I mean, that's another donation. You can tell others, hey, check this out. Like I said, I don't know if people agree with me or understand me or listen to me. A lot of people have been telling me, not my listener, but people that I thought were friends of mine. They said, well, we don't listen to you. And I said, okay, fine. I don't know why you don't, but that's all right. You don't have to listen to me, but don't complain. You know, don't blame me when you're walking into problems, and don't seek me out when you're not going to contribute your own work. And again, on that, the contributions, people are contributing to themselves, their own work, what I want you to do from getting behind the woodshed. And quite a few of you have stepped up and did the reading, and I tell you, bring the black and white. And you have a problem with the system, go through there. Go through the black and white and make sure your words are just reproducible there. Don't make it up. A lot of this stuff is written down. You got essentially the due process is pretty well laid out pretty nicely. And if you insist on it, you can go a long way just insisting on due process. And we just had, I'm still debating whether I want to discuss a little bit, but there was a traffic issue that came through and they wanted to railroad it. And I looked at it and said, no, there's a lot of problems. I think if we just do the paperwork to expose the due process failures and the bad tactics that are being done in order to potentially get the state in a better position, I think you're going to be able to just have the case dismissed. And that just happened. It wouldn't have happened if you were a spectator. They would run you down and take your money and whatever else and have that record against you. So whatever people might think of what I do, it's really about what y'all do. In a way, I'm a bit of a mirror. And I try to give you what I understand to be done that you may not understand, but it's really a mirroring what your efforts are. And I'll put that effort into you that you put into your own stuff. And it's, again, it's not something I can talk about on the broadcast. It's everybody's got a different issue. The generality of the Covey swindle, I could come to the broadcast to say some things, but I found out that that doesn't seem to work either if you're looking for an answer to be handed to you. This is not how this works behind the woodshed. You're not by yourself doing nothing. You're not brought to behind the woodshed by another if you don't do this to teach you. And so it becomes an engagement that you have to have, and there's a way to go about it. Whether I have the total answer is not what I'm saying, and that's not what there is. Have something. If you've got a better one, then maybe, again, get on the network and tell us the one the better you have. But if you only have one, maybe just put it in the chats. Engage. We got to get another engagement. Engage there, too. That's a content. So, thank you very much for those of you continuing to listen behind the woodshed and continue to tune in to what SoundMind is doing and getting all the radio stations up. And those will be selections, hopefully, eventually, that you can just tune into as you want from an app. That's still in the way, too. again, the basics, the nuts and bolts is due process. And that's what I usually talk about. Find out what that due process is in any particular subject matter and move forward with that. As I told you about being minors, it was all administrative, no criminal stuff. I just went through and figured out what the administrative side of that all was. That's really a non-threatening way to defend yourself. And so we definitely went through there and was able to relieve the minors from all this threat the government was throwing down. When you just say, wait a minute, here's a black and white, it says you got to do this, and we can't move until you do this. And then while you're doing that, without doing that, then you're making a crime here as well. They would all the agencies would back off. It wasn't that everyone was a winner, but that starts it. And then you can do more and more of that. As I told you, my first engagement with that was with the Forest Service District Ranger. And they sent a letter, and I told you, don't mess around, don't not answer those letters. That's the administrative notice that you need to respond to. Notice, opportunity, time, and place. That's a due process. They give you a notice. If they get a problem with you, you have now the opportunity to respond, and you better do it right. You don't have to necessarily answer them if they're all off point, and that's the first thing I found out that I needed to have answered was I have 21 pages of questions, and I didn't do it because I had the questions. I went through the law, and I found out all these things were sitting there that made it so they couldn't do that letter. And I said, so I have 21 pages that I found in the law that says you need to answer, and I made it multiple choice, 21 pages of these questions that you needed to answer. I'll give you multiple choice, make it simple, and tell me what the answer is. And then, once we get that done, we'll see where that squares, then I'll go back to answering your question. And so, silence. Silence, first of all, they're not going to do that kind of work. I needed to do the work so I understood the playing field, if you will. There you go, the black and white, understand it. And I met that district ranger a long time after, and met him doing a town hall where my colleague, Ron Gibson, rest in peace, Ron, and maybe that's a news to most people. Ron has passed away. I just got some information on it. I'm going to get some more information coming, but Ron passed about almost a year ago now. But we would get together, and we were able to work this all through and find answers for people and find answers for ourselves and move it on into answering what the people needed to hear. So we're bookends. Essentially, he's on one end of the podium, and on the dais, and I'm on the other. And we had a bunch of government officials in the middle at a county town hall meeting. And the people that called the meeting got all upset at miners, was there yelling at us, and we calmed them down. And I gave them essentially the black and white. I said, this is it. You have a problem with the miner. You know your complaint process is here. And they go, yes. I said, have you done that? No. I said, well, there's another problem. Have you looked at where the sourcing of that? It might not be the miner. And I said, this is the problem, is you come and complain about a miner who has property rights, and you're diminished and don't give him due process, and you don't insist on it. You're both losing your property rights. And you let the government come in, like these gentlemen here, the agencies, and they take care of it for you. When in fact, it was not necessarily at all that the government needed to do it all. You just needed to go and look at the law. Can you prove that a miner was poisoning your water? What was it? It was arsenic, he says. So this isn't a public meeting. We're going through this. Nuts and bolts. And Ron's answering on the other side periodically to certain things as they're now intrigued. And I said, so here you have you think it's arsenic, and did you get it tested? No. Okay, go get it tested. And do you know the source? If you don't have it tested, you don't know the source. Let me offer something. Just offer it. You can do the double check beyond this meeting. Go find out whether or not your minerals in your ground, where your property is, and where the water feeds through, doesn't have arsenic in it. The rocks have arsenic in it. In fact, that's pretty prevalent. And they didn't know that. Anyway, the point is, at town hall, we were able to voice the processes. Got people understanding what they were. We had the property owners that didn't understand they were adversely affecting their own rights the way they were proceeding because they were environmentalist types. And the leader of that group, overnight, before the next morning, flipped over and realized the property rights he was being violated in himself. And his whole bearing changed about how he viewed the law and how he was going to proceed and what he was going to argue about and object to. And do that against these very same officials that come against them. See, that's how that works. So, whatever you might think about what I do or not is irrelevant. If you have a good point and you have experience, bring it to the network. The people that listen to what I say and they put it into practice tend to be doing a lot better, and they have a better understanding. And if not, they get the beginnings of the foundation to move from. Not much different than what William Roberts would do in the more basic academic, if I can say academic way, where you take the encyclopedia, you take your studies, and you find out where's this thing start from? What's the nuts and bolts here? The basic of the foundation. How was the foundation built? And I would come in and build upon that. So these networks are important. You come with a contrary view or a consistent view or a compatible view, we can work together as broadcasters. I said a whole lot more here than maybe I should have, but maybe not. We need to get people back together. There's a need in this country still. There's an ignorance in this country. And I don't say that because I have all the answers. I have a little piece for sure. And we need lots of more people that have that little piece. And I understand there's a revolution afoot with this Massey thing. And so I'll probably touch a little bit about that. So maybe we can move a little bit further. I was hoping for this a long time ago, but it's just not really happening as quickly as I would have thought. And it's one of the main reasons why I hang in there. Otherwise, I'm not speaking to too many people, it seems. And if I am, you're not letting me know, like jump in the chats or donate or bring content or send other people. So from the Department of This Is Not How Successful Foreign Policy Is Done, U.S. Hormuz Insurance Initiative proves unprofitable. That's the other thing. We're not a nonprofit RLM, but there's no profit. So figure that out, and let's see if you can help us. Just keep our head above water here. But it's unprofitable. Now, who done it? Another one of these failed companies you put together. U.S. companies have not insured a single vessel passing through the Strait of Hormuz despite the plans of U.S. President Donald Trump. Quote, the up to $40 billion Bravo Dollar program has not yet been used at all, even as insurance rates have been stuck at multiples of their pre-war levels, the report says. In March, after Iran shut down the Strait of Hormuz, President Donald Trump said the U.S. would provide insurance to ships willing to transit the region at, quote, a very reasonable price. The program failed to launch because it did not meet the necessary transit requirements and depended on a U.S. naval escort arrangement that never came together. Only two vessels received U.S. military escort through the strait in early May under the short-lived, quote, Project Freedom, close quote, initiative, the report added. So many ideas, so few to none that work with all this, and besides, the profit was not the reason for offering insurance, was it? Project Freedom is yet another lipstick-wearing pig in a poke. Lipstick-wearing pigs in a poke are not foreign policy. Successful war strategies are something to crow about, as if Trump is casting pearls before swine because you are stupid people. And that wasn't said to protect those with a sensitive hearing, as I would normally do it, saying S-T-O-O-P-I-D. No, it's S-T-U-P-I-D, as he will say, and insult everybody. And Trump will just as soon insult everyone who doesn't have a lipstick handy, it seems, as well. So here we go. No insurance company work. How did Lloyd's of London do it successfully all these years? Amazing, right? Amateurs. But the Trump pomeranians don't see it's not about substance with Trump, but Trump's feelings, nothing more than feelings. And Kabuki, too, removing Iran's uranium, mostly about PR. Now, I hope those of you who have been listening to me, you hear me, those of you who have listened for a while, you hear me say, tie everything I say from episode to episode over decades now, week to week, month to month. It all seems to be working together. It keeps working together. Partly why I just keep running this type of a content presentation as I see the connections going on. We have to do that as people and get away from this PR, this kabuki that goes on. The U.S. president said the issue is considered a major stumbling block in peace talks and would just make him feel better. What else really needs to be said, folks? Feelings. He's the most woke president the world has ever seen, right, Karen? But let us hear the tossing of the word salad from the most notorious woke left or woke right, Karen in chief, or Jessica, if you must. U.S. President Donald Trump has said recovering Iran's highly enriched uranium is, quote, more for public relations, close quote, than anything else, downplaying what remains one of the key sticking points in negotiations aimed at ending the Middle East war. More for public relations, indeed. Kabuki, little screen theater, he's playing everyone for fools, as are his administrative circus clowns. Following the U.S.-Israeli bombing campaign against Iran last year, Trump claimed the strikes had, quote, obliterated, close quote, Iran's nuclear facilities and severely limited Tehran's ability to continue enrichment. However, an estimated 400 kilograms of uranium enriched to 60% purity, a short technical step from weapons-grade level, is believed to be buried beneath the rubble of bombed nuclear sites. And again, it is only 60, whether or not there's a short technical step. And that 60 can be attached to the medical products that they make and for research and development about that as well. And the latest is there's a carve-out. If there's any peace agreements going, which are not going so well at all, there's a new carve-out, and it has to do with the medical, as I was telling you. There's another thing going on that no one's really kind of admitting to. But here we go. In an interview for Fox News on Thursday, Trump suggested removing the material was not urgent because the U.S. maintained round-the-clock surveillance over the facilities, but added he would still, quote, feel better, close quote, if the uranium was removed. Maybe Trump needs a pacifier? A cuddly plague rat from the grim warp-speeding Reaper drone? Quote, we have 9 cameras on the site. On those 3 sites, 24 hours a day, we know exactly what's happening. Nobody even's gotten close to it, he said. Quote, I think it's more for public relations than it is for anything else. The other thing we could do is bomb it again, just to make it absolute. But I would just prefer feeling better getting it. Trump, who has repeatedly warned he could resume strikes on Iran, also signaled his patience with negotiations is running out. Quote, I am not going to be much more patient. They should make a deal, close quote, he said, while actively fighting triggered by U.S.-Israeli strikes on Iran in late February, paused under a fragile ceasefire reached in April. The negotiations on a broader peace deal remained deadlocked over Tehran's nuclear program. And I would have to say he's on the edge of running that war again, or continuing it under a new name, actually. Remember, he's going to take the budgeting from Epic FUBAR 1.0 and apply it to Epic FUBAR 2.0. But it's very close. If it hasn't happened here in the next few days, I don't know. They're talking like he's going to pull the trigger. Again, no extra reasons. Just, it makes him feel better. Feelings. Nothing more than feelings. Despite accusations of pursuing nuclear weapons, U.S. intelligence agencies assessed before the conflict that Tehran was not actively developing a bomb, according to former National Counterterrorism Center Director Joe Kent. IAEA Director General Rafael Grossi has also said the nuclear watchdog found no evidence of a, quote, structured program to manufacture nuclear weapons, quote, quote, in Iran. And there was also the fatwa that said Iran would not use nuclear weapons. They would not develop them. And that's a religious discussion that they adhere to very greatly. But nothing more than feelings, the Trumpster fire admits. Woke right, I say. Woke right. More dangerous than the woke left. And how many times I've shown an ideologically based feelings over facts is destructive, I couldn't tell you. Yes, that many times. And Zionist political party movement adherents using the untenable woke right Judeo-Christianity, Christian identity, so-called canard, may be the worst and most dangerous we've ever seen and have to deal with, because life is not a spectator sport. So get you behind the woodshed now and bring those miscreants with you. Trump admits Iran retains ability to launch retaliatory strikes. Again, tie all this to all the stuff that he's been saying, admitting certain things later on. And again, you see the markets swinging, you see the family profiting, you see the insiders profiting while he's doing all this nonsense. and just kicking the can down the road. He's got nothing going. But we hear the truth. It takes a long time. But Trump admits that Iran retains the ability to launch retaliatory strikes. In fact, it's so improved that their abilities were more than expected by the so-called experts. But in any regard, of course it does. Why wouldn't it? What moron would claim it didn't? Well, Trump did earlier, remember? The liar-in-chief. What a disgrace. Really. U.S. President Donald Trump acknowledged on Tuesday that Iran retains the ability to launch retaliatory strikes. Quote, they have a little ability to retaliate. Their missiles are 82% gone, we estimate. Their capacity to build is very little right now because we hit all of their manufacturing errors. Same thing with drones, largely gone, but they still have a little capacity. Yeah, not much, but they have a little, Trump told reporters. Except admitting that Iran retains ability to launch more retaliatory strikes, admits to more than a very little ability, and that you are operating under delusions, Mr. Trump. Warring with people you had no business warring with in all your rhetoric about peace. Moreover, retaining the ability to launch retaliatory strikes is not a neutered or neutral response. And having the ability to launch retaliatory strikes means Iran is also not defeated, showing again Trump's demand for a letter of surrender, as I mentioned last episode, is likewise delusional. Went to the tune of $80 to $100 billion. Bravo, $100 billion on this. More soon, it sounds like as well, to the great and irreparable harm of the American people whose financial straits Trump is causing, never figuring the dire financial conditions of Americans into his warmongering in preference to his billionaire buddies' familial and insider profit-taking, the military tech industrial complex, or Israel first for Americans to pay for. On Monday, Trump said that the United States had planned to launch a military attack on Iran on May 19th, but at the request of Qatar, Saudi Arabia, and the United Arab Emirates, postponed it in favor of a possible peace deal. He added that he had ordered the military to remain prepared to attack Iran should the parties fail to reach an acceptable agreement. But Trump omits to say he is the unilateral obstruction to any peace deal. Of many U.S. objectives, controlling global energy is likely at the top until all energy-supplying nations are subdued. There is likely no chance for peace. So here's the deal for you, Trump. You attack Iran, and they launch more than 1,000 missiles, because they have a little ability, 1,000 missiles. More than that, you resign. Got it? More than 1,000 missiles, you resign. Deal? And if not, why not? Old Nick, dear Zionista political movement firster, maybe you could weigh in there, Benjamin. America is in the palm of our hand and does our bidding, Satan Yehu Milikowski. Even if Israel is the cover story in this regard, how about it, pom-pomeranians, you cheerleaders? Go home too? And Taco Tuesday Trump continues. He added that he had ordered the military to remain prepared to attack Iran should the parties fail to reach an agreement. And Trump kicked that date down Taco Via 2, maybe to the 22nd now, or maybe the 23rd or 24th. Maybe sometime, he said, Monday. Maybe deep state mouthpiece Trump isn't calling the shots too. And he said specifically, quote, well, I mean, I'm saying 2 or 3 days, maybe Friday, Saturday, Sunday, something, maybe early next week, a limited period of time. Okay, and because Trump likes to impose unilateral deals on those he calls losers, what's good for the gander, but not a ponder gander, right, Vince? Is that if Iran retaliates with more than 1,000 missiles, you resign. Your goose is cooked, and cooked, well done, you did. Thank you for your attention to this matter. Iran's missiles are 82% gone indeed. We'll see, won't we? Or maybe not. What a buffoon Trump has turned out to be, selling it as the art of the deal. Especially when it turns out the art of the deal is just a con man conned you and the world. And I don't think there's any evidence, even the Christian, a world-renowned promoter, P.T. Barnum, ever said he didn't think he was getting into heaven. Should give a moment to pause, maybe a ponder gander, right, Vince? And to the feckless legislature of the United States, Senate advances bill to limit Trump's Iran powers. It took U.S. lawmakers 8 attempts to push through a largely symbolic resolution that is doomed to fail. Did you understand? Did it ever say in the Constitution legislature is a symbolic entity? That all they do is symbology? They take symbolic actions? I haven't read that. What kind of country do you live in when one of the branches of a triparent government is doomed to fail in checking the excesses of a supposed co-equal branch? Can anyone explain this? Well, I already have. But anything else? I mean, beyond voting harder. When the legislative branch is no longer a co-equal branch, the executive branch officer is the despot in chief. But besides all that explanation for years behind the woodshed, as I've learned you, since when did Congress not have sole constitutional power to declare the war, that the war they admit exists, that they didn't declare, Congress has no power to stop? The U.S. Senate has advanced a resolution aimed at curbing President Donald Trump's authority to continue military operations against Iran without congressional approval or a debate on the rationale, cost, strategy, and clear end goal. The chamber voted 50-47 on Tuesday to take up the War Powers Resolution, which would require Trump to end the hostilities against Iran, marking the first time either chamber has moved this measure forward since the conflict began in February. The measure is highly unlikely to pass as it still faces a final Senate vote, major obstacles in the Republican-controlled House of Representatives as well, which in any regard, the measure is highly unlikely to pass and is almost certain to be vetoed by Trump if it reaches his desk. Where in the American Constitutional Republic is it written that it can be a debate in the Senate that a war can be without congressional approval or debate on the rationale, cost, strategy, and lacks a clear end goal? If the Constitution wasn't clear enough, requiring the Senate insist that any war has congressional approval, debate on the rationale, cost, strategy, and clear end goal, and can be vetoed by the President to continue Satan Yehu's war, not a little excursion, as Trump fraudulently, evasively, shamefully mischaracterizes. War, now admitted and found by the Senate to be without congressional approval or debate on the rationale, cost, strategy, and a clear end goal, and be lawful, is the proof you live in a post-founding Father Lincolnized era occupied nation under foreign influence and allegiance. And to explain a bit better the historical context of the shift of power in the United States government to the presidency, mentioning the Lincoln presidency but tracing the political dynamics of the government till today, I received a comment posted to my Sustainable Bankers Wars Do With Less Autocannon Fodder No Right Left Everything Around Epstein episode from John Tudor, 2RU0. He put in my comments this link, and it's from an NEM report that does an interesting thing using scaled 3D printed models representing the relative branches of power through time of the supposed co-equal branches of the United States government, tracing the shift to the executive branch power enlargement, beginning with Lincoln, by discussing why Trump's ballroom is really dystopian. And I didn't put it all through a fine-tooth comb, and I don't think the minor questions I had caused by some of the statements, such as regarding Lincoln as the power shift end because the army went home, you'll see this in the beginning of that, that the power shifted on to the state level to the executive. It was almost invisible. And I've read the documents to you about that shift to the unseen practical power of the federal occupation in the states. Unseen, but just as international law requires in matters of foreign occupations, right, Dr. Francis Lieber? But these discrepancies, I believe I see, do not detract from the purpose of the video or the value and perspective people might get out of it. So I'd like, if you're interested, to go take a look. And it's an interesting take inspired by the Zionistas ballroom, my characterization, Zionistas ballroom. I think overall, it's a very good focused presentation. A lot of work went into it. And I don't think you'd waste your time watching at all, certainly if you had no idea of the incremental power shift occurring away from the public we were to keep and of the officers of that government duty-bound to protect and didn't, and how, as you can review in the BitChute video, why Trump's ballroom is really dystopian. It's a review of the past to see the natural extension of what we are witnessing today. Back to the future, if you please. And I thought very, very good, well, very good, concise thing to watch. Very neat. And the sizing that they use, the scale sizing on the building, relative building, I thought that was a neat adaptation to the concept. And it speaks a little bit of what we talked about here behind the Witch Head a lot. And watching and seeing how the Republic is not being kept. And they put that on us. And international law requires we throw it off. And we aren't. We can vote harder, though, don't we? And also, as you've been told behind the Witch Head, Iranian Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi said Americans are being forced to absorb the rising costs of Washington's illegal war of aggression against Iran. Quote, put aside gas price hike and stock market bubble. Real pain begins when U.S. debt and mortgages rates start to jump, close quote, Araghchi wrote on X. He pointed to the rising U.S. Treasury yields, warning that the consequences of the U.S.-Israeli escalation will not be limited to fuel prices or market turbulence. Quote, auto loan delinquencies are already at 30-plus year highs. This was all avoidable, close quote. Araghchi's remarks come as the United States economy faces growing pressure from the conflict it chose to launch, with ordinary Americans left to pay the bills. And I want to comment on this word Americans, and I want us to focus on that a little bit as I would get through this. But he's pointing out the Americans are footing the bill, and I will just maybe throw the punchline out. You didn't hear it say, let's make Americans great again, did you? And they're not. And so this is an interesting, different take. He didn't say the Americans great again. I just did. I was triggered, folks. But with ordinary Americans left to pay, we are the beast of burden, remember. And Trump is exploiting all of that. Trump jokes. He can run for prime minister in Israel after his current term. But he's not joking. Zionists consider Trump their messiah, God sent, remember? In any regard, joking or not, he's likely to be too old for it to matter. And he can afford to call it a joke, so-called, to get it off his chest that he is a Zionist Federation political movement firster shill. And we also have a prior indication by this deceiver-in-chief in that no one anywhere ever claimed he was joking on the campaign trail that he would make America great again and how, and then did none of it. And he never joked that he intended to make Americans great again. Then, he likes to be surrounded by losers, don't forget. He stuffed his administration with Zionists, took their billions of dollars, implanted their corporate CEOs and cyber gulag surveillance infrastructure, enables his family to profit from these underhanded inside jobs, and advances every objective Satan Yehu suggests, while leaving Americans to pay for all of it, and for Israelis to live off of Americans' hardship, scot-free, even Dred Scott, because U.S. citizens, so-called, enjoyed the civil rights of extortion of every kind, like taxes, and pains and punishments that anyone could read since 1868 or the United States Code today at 42 U.S.C. 1981. And Trump's a Scot, isn't he? A crown cousin, I hear. And none call it treason, right, Lysander Spooner? Well, except in you, Lysander, and thank you very much. Lysander Spooner opened my eyes to a lot of stuff. He came right after I read that encyclopedic version of international law. Admiralty, and all that. It's a good read for those of you who want to break your connections to what you've been told by the system. Even if you think you never read his work and you think you've broke away from the system, you don't think like the system, go read what he has to write. Very cool stuff. U.S. President Donald Trump said on Wednesday, jokingly, that he would try running for the post of the prime minister in Israel after his presidential term is finished, citing his popularity among the Israeli people. Quote, maybe after I do this, I'll go to Israel and run for prime minister. I had a poll this morning. I'm 99%, Trump told reporters. So why wouldn't the Israelis like such a generous Uncle Messiah Sam? All the while, old Nick Deer brings Israel and its zealots into the very function of the United States government, even to run off those American representatives that would insist on exposing the Epstein class and bring some modicum of justice to their victims. Which I have said now appears to be all of us being victims, however detached we might think we be. Is there a difference that Trump is the president in the U.S. and not Israel if the Zionists get absolutely everything they want from America through Trumpenstein? Isn't it even better that they get it from you than you have to pay for themselves? Isn't it even better that they get it from you than have to pay for it themselves or with their lives? Why is it Trump doesn't want winners around him? Why don't Americans benefit from winners around the president? Why didn't he ever say he intended to make Americans great again? Why is it he is promoting and cavorting with losers? He also said that Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, Satanyahu Milikowski, the other Messiah in chief, quote, is not treated right, close quote, in his country. Yeah, he should be immune from the war crimes the loser has been charged with committing or the absolute immunity Trump enjoys here in the United States, right? The president is absolutely immune, he asserts. No difference or distinction between the two governments as well, I guess. On Sunday, Trump and Netanyahu had held a phone call during which the two leaders discussed the situation around Iran, and I heard that Netanyahu was not too happy about it. Apparently, his hair was on fire regarding this. And if you didn't see what Trump did to unseat Thomas Massie, directing the Zionist billionaire millions to buy off democracy, so-called, you're not paying attention. Any Trump MAGA endorsement is being paid for with fraudulent fiat debt. What kind of a country do you think comes with that? The Kentucky primary is reported to be the most expensive in history and shows your countrymen can be bought with fiat debt instruments by those that don't put local interests above foreign, let alone America first, and that, quote, democracy is a weapon against you. Our republic, if you can keep it, was a warning that I've been explaining both are. That if the legislature can be bought off and concedes its power to the executive, no checks, no balances, that both branches act as a lawless ruling mob. Mob rule is another definition for democracy. Living under a mob rule called democracy is not keeping the republic. And the only silver lining I can see to this Kentucky primary is that a whole lot of people got motivated to at least tell others about the condition and began to take action against an identifiable common foreign influence foe. And even if it was too late, maybe more are coming to pull on the ropes to topple the edifice of corrupt power, which appears to be any government, howsoever established. Yeah, joke's on the U.S. I mean, us. And it has been. And I don't know how we get around that until we figure that out. And as to those Kentucky primaries, for those of you still thinking you can vote harder, and you notice the immense anomalies in the results, those of you that are resident, so-called resident, and your federal registration says so, so don't deny that part, that you are resident in Kentucky, you have some options to question those primary results. And I think once you've looked at the facts and do this for yourself and come to the evidentiarily supportable conclusions of an election fraud of some sort, here's a post in the next link that you can get to help accelerate your objection and also to who to call or to file with. And I believe you should. I mean, because first off, you voted. It's your right. But more importantly, Secondly, if a high-quality objection isn't brought to bring the heat of 1,000 suns on the problem continues in the dark, festering, and there's no way then to prove or expose that voting can't be made great again, or it can't. Which I don't think is possible as long as the United States of America is an occupied nation run as a democracy, so-called, and not the republic we the people were to keep. From the ex-post of Danny K. Politics, reposted by Gary L., explaining what he's doing to begin the process of doing an investigation of the propriety of the Kentucky primary elections. If my listener is so inclined, he writes, I filed Kentucky Open Records Act requests for records from the May 19th GOP primary between Ed Gillerain and Thomas Massey. The filings were sent to Boone, Kenton, and Campbell County clerks this morning for a cast vote records, precinct splits, machine logs, and chain of custody documents. An FEC complaint over MAGA Kentucky's $25 million and the deep fake ad featuring MTG's Take It Down Act invocation goes out this week. These three legal routes exist for anyone questioning the results. Kentucky Open Records Act requests can be filed by any Kentucky resident or news gathering organization to county clerks for cast vote records, precinct splits, machine logs, and chain of custody documents. 5-day response window under KRS 61.880. Here we have it again, black and white. Just go there and use it. Go read it, understand it, correctly interpret it, and then apply it. A formal election contest under KRS 120.055 must be filed in the circuit court within 10 days of the primary, meaning by May 29th, but only a candidate who received at least 50% of the winning vote has standing. And so I see that and I say, well, that's a pretty interesting problem, isn't it? And maybe that law needs to be changed for better accountability. For those of you that think you can vote harder. Those of you that can't, maybe that you see how the failure happens and you might want to engage somewhere. Again, whatever quivers your liver that makes you get back involved and where. As I've said, it came to my conclusion, I don't need to vote for any of these people. They're going to be voted in. What I did insist on is that they follow the law. What I insisted was also if we can find someone who would do that. And I've explained to you how a colleague of mine and I did find one of those, and he worked with one with a good county commissioner and made all the difference in the world. We had to understand, I was able to mentor the problem with the attorneys, how they're going to cut down everything that they did and how to be, again, you can't be wrong once, and so you'd be right all the time, and you start guiding a commissioner who's willing to put their chin on the line, if you will, to take the steps it takes, educate them to what happens, and they take the action. They're going to be in office. Find the ones that you can work with. There might be options for some of you that do to do that. This is not just, oh, we just vote or we just send these. But here we have one person who's worked out the system for you, if you're inclined, to jump in really, really fast and get this situation worked out. Maybe you can contact him, find out what he's done, summarize what he's done, and bring it for yourself or to help him, even help him move this along. An FEC complaint now over the $25 million in outside spending and deep fake ad featuring Marjorie Taylor Greene invoking the Take It Down Act can be filed by any U.S. person under 52 U.S.C. Section 30109, no deadline, and it must be notarized. And the links are below he posts, and you can get those, I suppose, on the X, for those of you that want to get into that. And I was especially pleased to see Massey, who dared to expose there are those in federal government that are loyal to Israel, not America or Americans, who was defeated, apparently, by the Israeli lobby, APAC-backed non-player character loyal to Israel, not America or Americans. But Massey came out in a non-concession speech that he said, it wasn't a concession speech, to say that he didn't intend, but that his campaign appeared to have started a revolution. And I appreciate his attitude about this and his shift. And he, you read a little interview that he did, he shifted that right there on the podium. And I appreciate he could do that on his feet and in the public, in a public speaking setting. It's very difficult. You've got to be a pretty cool dude to be able to do that to begin with. And so I was, again, I was pleased to see that he was doing it this way. And I can only say, if it started a revolution, I'm hoping so. I'm hoping so. Part of what Getting Behind the Woodshed is about, find out what you can do, find out you're not helpless, and go take the action you need to take. Doesn't have to be anything anybody else even understands. You go understand it. And people came from all over the nation to support him. Again, I say this, he's a politician running for votes. I'm not just talking about that. He may be talking about that. I'm saying people came together and started to see the flaws in the system for themselves. They came from all over the country. They're going back home. They were inspired by something, and they can carry on the baton, whatever they found, whether it's for votes or not. It could be anything. And they found out that there's people that are engaged and will come together to do things. And that's what we need to know about. And so, again, people came from all over to support him. Broad spectrum. It was Democrats as well as Republicans and independents. And maybe this is the next step on here for people to see and say some of what I do and to begin to correct the miscreants occupying your lives behind a woodshed nationally. Again, it's just a word I sent out. Are you noticing? Are you listening? Are you then putting it in practice? And we have to shift gears. And I'm not sure what it's going to take to inspire people, but Massey did. Massey inspired a lot, and a lot of people got to see some certain things. I'm really not too interested in the politics anymore. It's going to take people to roll up their sleeves and work, again, local, against this global insurrection. That we can then focus on the Zionists. They're just a part. They're just another one. And as we might expect, the money laundering organized crime syndicate government becomes multi-billion dollar unaccountable market lurks behind global biosecurity facade. Russia told the truth about the U.S.-controlled bioweapons lab found in Ukraine, and the West should apologize for peddling the political smokescreen of Russian disinformation, Jeff J. Brown, curator of the Bioweapon Truth Commission, tells Sputnik. However, behind the global security facade looks, quote, a multi-bravo dollar, unaccountable market that is deeply invested in making genuine audits and punishment impossible, notes the bioweapons expert. And for this, understand, this is broad-spectrum corruption that has the same modus operandi. Unaccountable billions somehow developed. It is unlikely that anyone will be held accountable, believes Jeff J. Brown, commenting on the probe that the Office of the Director of National Intelligence has announced into the over 120 U.S.-funded biological laboratories abroad. Again, as I posed last episode, what about those that are in the country, in the gates, that actually caused it? So be careful. We look out there, some other nations seeing it too. We don't want to be forgetting that they did it to us at home, and unaccountably to this point. Russia submitted all of its evidence on the biolab to the Biological Weapons Convention, but it has, quote, no teeth for compliance and punishment, quote, quote. The BWC was created by the U.S., quote, to camouflage its extensive post-war BW development, biological weapons development, and production, quote, quote. Quote, Uncle Sam wanted a superficial, spineless international body, and it got it, adds the expert. And this is what we're finding. No accountability, and they prepare the ground to make that so. And as we see, no accountability, as I say, the black and white says there's supposed to be accountability, but you don't have officers that are actually pulling that off. They need to be targeted. They need to be outed. And we're seeing people starting to do that. And so again, become vocal local. I was talking about William Roberts earlier. His broadcast was called Become Vocal Local. This is probably our only power at this point. When you understand about the dystopian ballroom and see the history of that, you go back to what I've told you about the Lincoln era occupation of the federal occupation of these United States, you might start to appreciate more of the integration of all this working today against all of us. Biolabs in Ukraine secretly developed offensive capabilities. Biolabs in Ukraine secretly developed offensive capabilities, retired U.S. Lieutenant, Army Lieutenant Earl Rasmussen told RIA Novosti. Quote, the bottom line is that there are biolabs in Ukraine and other places developing potential biological offensive capabilities. In some cases, there was rumored to be research based on DNA makeup and the use of non-human species to transmit, Rasmussen said. And this virus narrative the Gov agents want you to believe, non-human species? How about non-species, like not natural? And I don't mean alien, extraterrestrial, or extra-dimensional, or alien-invaded. I mean lab-made. Pretty straightforward. Right, Occam? He pointed out that these facilities operated under top-secret conditions and expressed confidence that they pursued narrowly focused objectives. Quote, absolutely they are dangerous, and if left unchecked, could result in an accident such as the coronavirus or worse, Rasmussen added. Yes, such as, or worse. And this is BTWRLM 669. Director of National Intelligence Tulsi Gabbard said on Monday, apparently right before she resigned, health issue in the family, apparently, when the last isolation is to be kicked out of the Trump team, said on Monday that her team will conduct an investigation into more than 120 U.S.-funded biological laboratories located abroad, including in Ukraine. But she's resigned. Is that going to continue here? We don't know, I guess. We keep track of that one, right? Russia has repeatedly stated that the U.S. has been funding the development of biological weapons and has placed dozens of its biological laboratories in Ukraine in violation of international agreements. And it's not just in Ukraine. They're all over the Eastern Bloc over there. They want to check the Luger Institute over there in Tbilisi. Left a memory hole message in X a long time ago, when it was Twitter, I think. The Russian Defense Ministry said that Washington had transferred all necessary biological materials in its program from Ukraine after the beginning of the special military operation. In 2022, the Biden administration denied claims by Russia and China about the presence of U.S.-owned or U.S.-operated chemical or biological laboratories in Ukraine. Yes, chemical, as I've explained behind the woodshed. The great Kobe swindle utilizes a chemical, not biological source. You knew that when you heard it described as novel, a synthetic substance, a protein and lipid chemistry, like your cultured or fake meat. But with all due respect, Mr. Rasmussen, did we need a to so characterize retired military officer to impress us that the biolabs developed offensive capabilities, especially after the great Kobe swindle warp speed attack? Of course they're offensive. They're highly offensive. These agents only get an exception to being prohibited weapons if they can muster a civilian or veterinary dual use pursuant to Title 50 in the United States Code. It doesn't take an expert from the military. Guy behind the woodshed could do it. Anybody got behind the woodshed could do it. And some of you did. And thank you very much. Again, I appreciate it. I put some time into some people that were putting in there. That was worth it. You enriched your life and you got to see some things and then you did. And you did things and you got a muscle memory. And you're able to function. That's what got me going for Massey. My lack of adherence to politics aside, people got motivated. It looked like the proper ways. And people that have, I guess, a whole lot more influence than I do, for sure. But speaking about virus narratives, see, that last one was a promotion of viruses, and it's not. I hope you picked, I did hide that a little bit, but maybe I hid it a little bit as well. I'm pointing out that these people are still pushing the virus canard when it's not. And that's how they continue to get us. And speaking of the virus narrative, just in time, too, Ukraine has confirmed that hantavirus is widespread among the military personnel of the Ukrainian armed forces in the Sumy direction, Russian law enforcement agencies told Sputnik. Quote, Kiev doctor Irina Semenova stated that the hantavirus is widespread among the military personnel of the armed forces of Ukraine in the Sumy era. According to the medic, there are rodents, unsanitary conditions, and weakened immunity in the Ukrainian positions on this sector of the front, which contributes to the spread of the disease, quote, quote, the source said. Rats? That's it? Not one of the 30 or so U.S. biolabs close by? Law enforcement agencies have previously told Sputnik that the Ukrainian border guards in the Chernogov region were suffering regular losses from hantavirus. Hantaviruses are a group of viruses transmitted to humans through contact with rodents. Maybe it's the rats migrating from the biolabs getting their contaminated baggage rifled through. Just an idea, folks. The great Kobe Swindle has shown the world a toxic synthetic lipidized protein string can mimic the effects of a natural venom, but one that can be made to replicate itself inside the body, which is also not natural. Not in the way that it's doing it, to the point that you have special processes to filter out those components. And those processes may be working. There's much more people. I think there's up to 27, 29 people going to Japan to get this thing taken out of their body. I'm just going to leave the information where it is and accept that's what's going on. People are changing right before our eyes. Whether or not their proofs are true, I'm not so sure. But their activity levels are changing. Their look is changing. Their thoughts seem to be changing. Their energy is changing. So those of you that need it, check into that. I don't have a name for it. It's just a process in Japan for filtering your blood. Check that out. Stops this process. The hantaviruses are a group of viruses that can cause hemorrhagic fever with renal syndrome and hantavirus pulmonary syndrome. And not to make light of this bioweapon lab's proximity aside, and despite the vaccine, there's an application filed by the U.S. Army Medical Research and Development Command in 2011. And the patent, meaning novel, not natural, substance, issuing in 2016, the hantavirus has been in the neustis for a long time. Well, for the U.S. back to 1993, with the Four Corners outbreak in the U.S., as they were likely studying it, it was known to exist in Asia prior to that, suspiciously, or not. But even then, only since the 1970s, and the Vietnam War, coincidentally, found as coincidentally, in South Korea, the same place the lab technicians were from that got caught carrying in advanced pig's fly flu strings. No, not the strings, the protein strings. And all the man-made coincidences aside, the hantaviruses have been found causally linked in proximity to rat or mouse environs. And given that part is true, it's not to be messed with in nature either. So don't take my dismissive stance here relative to the synthetic unnatural or the potential that this stuff is real naturally, and to watch yourself, be aware of your environment and take precautions. And I would say that goes for the tick invasion this year that we're seeing. Whether or not, as reported, these ticks, thousands of them, are dropped by helicopters in little boxes on private land, if you can believe that. So be aware, take precautions. The hantavirus infections happen to people every year, though, since the surveillance of hantavirus has started in 1985, about 890 people have contracted it. And so that shouldn't be really too concerning if you aren't those people, I suppose. It's a not unknown, even if it's not known to its victims at the time, so pay attention. But this report from Russia, no less, right in time, appears to, even if legit, be an opportunistic coincidence with that cruise ship charade and the WHO, no, not the rock group or the owl or the little people from Whoville, but the World Health Organization promo to report it where it hadn't been at least obviously reported prior, makes me highly suspicious. As well, the Russian report makes no mention of Russian soldiers being affected by hantavirus, despite Russian soldiers fighting in the same area in Ukraine, not just at the border. Were these solely Ukrainian soldiers victims of a U.S. government vaccine, so-called, bio-experiment? Is it just that healthy eating causes the change, maybe? Or like the COVID-19 symptom virus, so-called, that knew it could only fly 6 feet and could not fall to affect those sitting at tables eating because additionally people don't breathe or talk when they eat, but could attack only those standing or walking? None thought it was the patented jab. Well, none before it was a thing, except to those that get behind the woodshed. So U.S. labs make just as much sense as the rats. And what doesn't make sense is Russia's not making a lab origin mention and leaving a lot to be derived from implication if Russia is not in on the sustainable biowarfare global gambit or to market its own bioweapon vaccine as the U.S. military patented. And the opening sentence of which states on that patent is, the invention contemplates a new synthetic codon-optimized Synombre virus, SNV, full-length M-gene open reading frame, ORF, that encodes a unique consensus amino acid sequence. If you had any doubt these are novel proteins, not natural, man-made events, or that you couldn't tell the difference. And I'll provide a link to the patent if you're interested to see or read it. Synombre virus full-length M segment-based DNA vaccines. But it'll have to be from Google Patents. I couldn't find another one, and I don't have the time to look around to find a better one. I usually don't like anything Google, but this one I just wanted to. I couldn't find another one. You can get this one, and we'll just have to call it good. And another type of apparently contagious synthesis, Silicon Valley has kept religion at arm's length until now. Tech companies are increasingly turning to faith leaders in quest to create ethical AI. Remember, ethical. Ethical is made up. You can have attorneys that are stealing you blind, but they can operate ethically to do so. As concerns mount over artificial intelligence and its rapid integration into society, tech firms are increasingly turning to faith leaders for guidance on how to shape the technology. A surprising about-face on Silicon Valley's long-standing skepticism of organized religion. Leaders from various religious groups met last week with reps from companies like Anthropic and OpenAI for the inaugural, quote, Faith AI Covenant, close quote, roundtable in New York to discuss how best to infuse morality and ethics into the fast-developing technology. Ethics is essentially just a consensus of what isn't going to be wrong to do relative to anything in particular. Like, how will an accountant do what he will? How will the attorney do certain things? What standards are they going to have? And it's all limited liability. It has nothing to do with morality whatsoever. But anyway, that aside, and some other things, these two words are just so loaded, it's not funny, folks. But they're doing it. See, listen to the commingling that's going on, the covenant that they're trying to put together here. It was organized by the Geneva-based Interfaith Alliance for Safer Communities. I hope you heard that out of sustainable development, sustainable communities. That was the Obama and Clinton era, remember? Safer Communities. I read up documents on that, remember? We're not too far away, are we, from all that globalista stuff. Safer Communities, which seek to take on issues such as extremism, radicalization, and human trafficking. The warm and fuzzy folks. The roundtable is expected to be the first of several around the globe, including in Beijing, Nairobi, and Abu Dhabi. And back to that, I want to do the human trafficking. I don't see any of those people coming out and condemning Epstein class, do they? No. We're going to engage and allow genocide, too, right out of the Zionists. But anyway, moving on. Tech execs need to recognize their power and their responsibility to make the right decision, said Baroness Joanne Shields, a key partner in the initiative, Baroness Initiative. She worked as a tech executive with stints at Google and Facebook before pivoting to British politics. Quote, regulation can't keep up with this, close quote, she said, but the leaders of the world's religions, with billions of followers globally, have the, quote, expertise of shepherding people's moral safety, close quote. She noted, adding that faith leaders ought to have a voice. And remember, I've talked years and years ago about the Pope pushing unity while promoting sustainable development and making a unity deal with the Orthodox Zionists, Jews, around 2015, and Pope Leo XIV is doing the same. So yeah, it's kind of like that. Now AI enhanced. Demons in the machine, indeed. Again, touching the tip of the iceberg here, there's so much to show and expose about this. I hope people are paying attention and I touch this and notice how they're rounding the societies out, how they're controlling them, where these folks are going, to do so, and the lies and deception that comes from these monsters, essentially. And drone attacks, nuclear plant, Iran had called a possible target. So we have these potential false flags going on. Keep our head on a swivel, if you will. I don't know how you do that. I've always wondered about how you did that. Really. That's kind of like exorcism stuff, isn't it? But anyway, UAE reports Baraka installation remains in operation. A drone attack has ignited a fear near the United Arab Emirates' only nuclear power station, heightening concerns about military activity around nuclear sites during the Iran war. UAE authorities said the strike hit an electrical generator outside the outer security boundary of the nuclear power plant about 175 miles west of Abu Dhabi. Officials reported no damage to the reactors, said radiation readings were normal, and confirmed the plant remained in operation. The International Atomic Energy Agency said that one of Baraka's four reactors, which collectively supply about a quarter of the country's electricity, switched to emergency diesel power after the strike. The UAE did not identify who launched the drone, and no one immediately claimed responsibility. Yeah, well, it might be they did not identify who, because it was reported the drones came from the west. And Iran is not to the west of the UAE. So that would be Saudi Arabia or Israel. And we go to Israel, now we talk about that AI and that morality. They're using that Palantir AI, open AI, the ChatGPT, to go kill people. Ethically as possible, I suppose. Iranian state media had previously named Baraka as a potential target after President Trump warned in late March that he would destroy Iranian power infrastructure, beginning with its largest plants, if Tehran did not ease its control over the Strait of Hormuz, which still hasn't happened. Still playing a game. Going to reduce it, return it back to what it started with, even if Trump would have just not done anything. We'd be right there already. IAEA Director Rafael Grossi voiced serious concerns and urged all parties to avoid military action near nuclear facilities. Now, do they have to say that? Did he really have to come out to say that? I guess he did. Somebody did, and I would have to say, since they didn't come from the West and they don't have any tracking that they came from the East first, either Saudi Arabia or Israel is doing that. Don't you know? Moving more east to Asia, what went wrong with Trump-China visit? U.S. President Donald Trump's visit to China was, quote, mostly performative, close quote. Remember, he said, it's just PR, this uranium over there in Iran. But it's performative over there in China. It's Kabuki Theater, P.T. Barnum's greatest show on earth, modernized. And since that does fairly describe the theatrics, do we need to hear more? I guess we should hear the rest of the take on this circus event that I understand had an extraordinary contingent of clowns ready to perform. The U.S. President Donald Trump's visit to China was, quote, mostly performative, with both sides sending political messages to global and domestic audiences, veteran geopolitical analysts and former U.S. Marine Brian Berlechtig told Sputnik. Quote, both the U.S. and China have assumed entrenched positions, primarily because of the aggressive pursuit of primacy by the U.S. and China's growing ability to preserve its sovereignty and interests, no matter how much pressure the U.S. applies, close quote, Berlechtig said. The U.S. came to Beijing from a position of dangerous and belligerence, having kidnapped the Venezuelan president and blockaded Iran, thereby widening the blockade of China itself. While the U.S. presents itself as engaging in diplomacy with China, most of its energy and effort are being invested in, quote, sharpening the dagger, close quote, that diplomacy is meant to distract global attention from, the dependent notes. Quote, U.S. plans to isolate and contain China were set in motion decades ago, while constantly updated and adjusted over time. It appears that the manner by which China has modernized, along with advantages provided by its massive industrial base and rapid technological advances, has allowed it to continue to rise despite the U.S.'s best efforts, Berlechtig noted. But the U.S. inability to extract concessions from China speaks to just how much stronger China has become he concluded. And China's new AI model highlights unique ecosystem built on tech sharing to tackle global challenges. Watching the refinement, why China's in such a strong position, and notwithstanding the fact that it's not that strong on the Western dollar side. But remember, it's the producer in the world now. As I told you, we saw back in the 80s, tech jobs, they were going to ship them on over to China, and they were offshoring all the manufacturing at that time, and we knew then it was a bad mistake. And you're watching how hard it is to get it all back and how much money it's taking today. And while we're looking around here in the United States now, China's advancing what it does. And this AI is an interesting tool when it's properly used. And I think they're kind of focused on how that goes on relative to technology, but they're also bringing it in the sustainable development side. And I think we can see that here. We see the ecosystem built. Sharing to tackle global challenges is not but a globalist view. In Beijing, an AI scientific agent has already identified more than 11 previously unknown particle decay modes, discoveries that would traditionally require research teams to spend years filtering through enormous volumes of high background noise data. In the field of space science, another AI scientific agent in the same system has achieved highly accurate solar flare prediction, capturing 100% of the X-class flares while enabling an autonomous intelligent telescope observation system. Is this really cool stuff? I'm just blown away to hear this stuff. Kind of like the science I wanted to see done. And so China's doing it. These breakthroughs stem from a Science 1 100 model system released in late April by the Chinese Academy of Sciences, CAS. The Global Times learned from the Academy that the Science 1 100 is neither a chatbot nor a text-to-image generator. That's the toys for the plebs. Rather, it is a comprehensive, quote, AI scientist, quote, quote, system, purpose-built for scientific research, designed to empower disciplines ranging from mathematics and physics to biology, representing China's globally leading position in AI for science. More importantly, this advanced system has not been kept technologically exclusive. Instead, it has been opened and shared with researchers globally. Tech sovereignty is not about isolation. High standard opening up to the outside world has earned its own chapter in China's five-year blueprint, according to Xinhua News Agency, on March 10, 2026. Not long ago, DeepSeek released a preview version of its next-generation V4 model, which is also planned to be fully open-source. At the same time, multiple Chinese technology companies have rapidly upgraded their open-source large model ecosystems in recent months. While many Western companies guard their most valuable models, China has embraced open source, and almost all of its top-performing systems are widely available, the New York Times reported on April 24th of 2026. A distinct, quote, Chinese-style open source, close quote, ecosystem is now emerging. One that goes beyond simple code sharing to combine the collectivists' belief that, quote, shared prosperity is true prosperity, close quote. Is shared prosperity true prosperity from the American non-collectivist point of view? Now, we know China is promoting sustainable development. We know Agenda 2030, the goal date for implementation of sustainable development, explains shared prosperity is only prosperous if it serves Gaia, meaning people must be in perpetual debt to third-party overlords that claim to know the best for Gaia. We need to be global governance themselves. We know that one of the features of this is direct democracy. It's the antithesis of society with property rights. In fact, under sustainable development, you will have no property and like it. You in the United States don't seemingly know that now, right? Local code enforcers can impose international codes on you already, right? the codes of which were imposed directly by the barest shell of democracy, the few determining the property rights of the many individuals that owned it. The many having no actionable knowledge to demand at least due process before the taking. It's what I talk about all the time. And you're listening to this story, you're watching and being exposed to how they're going to implement the future through AI and using AI systems and science. And that's exactly what China's been doing when they open source it. So what's missing in this promotion? Being open source? Well, look, Linux is open source. What do they do with that? Yeah, well, what's different? What's missing? Are you hearing anything about the lack of privacy these models don't provide, or that they phone home to China? And that it isn't just that you come up with a novel idea that American patent law allows you some time to profit from? It's who with knowledge of that novel idea can manufacture it and get it into the global market. And I can assure you most Americans can't. And China is uniquely positioned now to exploit all the ideas generated by people using China's AI globally, the world over, and whether or not those people could ever afford their own ideas being brought into the world. And I saw this happening. Amazing feature of China years ago, right about the time we found out they couldn't cast a roller for an excavator. We couldn't get a good roller from them, just to cast steel. Right after that, they started to shift. And I was helping a friend of mine. I got to see it by helping a friend of mine with a patent at the time that he had that Sears and Ryobi had taken and stolen. And I was looking at this problem, and I'm saying, well, hey, design it so it needed batteries. I said, design it so it doesn't need batteries. Obsolete the old patent. And in a couple of days, I went back and I started thinking about it. How are you going to take batteries out of it? It needs to run a laser. I mean, how are you going to run it to do that? Well, there's a way, I guess. I came up with an idea. And so a couple of days later, I handed my friend the improvised battery-less device design. And he sent that drawing to China, R&D manufacturer as well, to get it built. And in 30 days, I was looking at the finished working device that was in my head, then drawn up a mere month prior. Truly amazing thing. You have it in your hand. What was in your head was in your hand. And it works, and it's there to be moved into the world, from mind to matter, if you will. But that was the private development over a decade ago, and no AI, just barely established communication between designers and Chinese prototyping manufacturers. But what happens when government AI makes nothing private and you get rice for your creativity is the problem that starts developing this. Now, returning to this article with all these ideas in mind, an AI ecosystem here that goes beyond simple code sharing to combine the collectivists' belief that, quote, shared prosperity is true prosperity, close quote, with China's strategy of achieving technological self-reliance and strength through cooperation rather than exclusion. Can you hear it coming? Yep, that's the big sucking sound, the commons property vacuum cleaner sucking up all technology for the good of sustainable governance and national security and national strategic priorities, of course. Open model tackling shared challenges. Quote, China's open source large models not only help global users tackle daily life challenges and provide technical references for global large model development, but also deliver tangible benefits to more people in various professional fields, such as scientific research. Zheng Dajun, deputy director of the Institute of Automation at CAS, according to Zheng, the Science 1-100 system is an achievement of joint research coordinated by dozens of CAS-affiliated institutes. It advances AI from science, from fragmented closed operations to collaborative and open platform-based development, fundamentally reshaping the organizational pattern and workflows of traditional science research. The launch of Science 1-100 is no coincidence, but a response to the global trend of AI for science. Amid the accelerated evolution of a new round of technological revolution, AI is evolving from an auxiliary tool into a core driving force for scientific research. Unlike standalone research-oriented AI models, Science 1-100 forms a full industrial chain covering foundational models, discipline-specific models, and scenario-based applications. As one of the world's first systemic and full-stack AI for science model systems, it is truly capable of understanding scientific theories, conducting research, and enabling practical implementation, according to Zing. Right, likely because certain scientific disciplines rely on math, more objective arithmetic. In fact, AI has just solved an 80-year-old math problem that may have revolutionized how AI can design things in the future, from how the AI solved the problem through the use of diverse math disciplines that mathematicians didn't know to do or could do, and was able to bring all this together, again, pattern analysis, and find out how to apply it. Very fascinating, very cool stuff. Again, objective though. Quote, popular general purpose large models work well for daily chatting, copywriting, and image creation, maybe videos too, yet fall short in scientific research. Look, right again, those daily things don't require exactness. Nevertheless, Zhang agrees that general AI for general applications or subjective things, or those things proceeding with imperfect knowledge, or that don't need to be tested actually beforehand, cannot be trusted. AI and your problem with the government? Not so much. You being lulled into a sustainability fold? Yeah, not so much either. Building a collaborative technology ecosystem. To date, China has inked 120 government-to-government science tech cooperation agreements. Government-to-government. A significant portion of which are with developing countries, according to Xinhua report on May 10, 2026. In the corporate sphere, Chinese companies have also become major drivers to global open source momentum. As the New York Times observed, quote, Chinese companies have embraced making their most advanced artificial intelligence models available to all with their back doors. When the Chinese startup DeepSeek published details about one of its AI models last year, it sent shockwaves through the tech industry. The DeepSeek moment reflected a shift in the global AI landscape. The change was about not only lower costs, but also openness in how technology is shared. Open source AI models from Chinese firms have toppled global usage charts, and their rapidly expanding global adoption underscores the fact that Chinese tech's rise is expanding the pie rather than taking slices from others. The old Chinese saying that shared prosperity is true prosperity has found renewed meaning in the digital age, Zhu said. In sustainable development as well. As you can read in the agenda, prosperity is shared responsibility in perpetual indebtedness. Do you see here better what I've said then about Obama's pivot to China was not about the military, but the military focus was a cover? And we can read that right from the article. And by the way, there's a lot to this article I'm not reading, but you might want to read through to understand better what the future holds as the globalistas get their way. You know, consider just China here, what's going on. Despite some challenges, Yu and his Chinese colleagues still agree the future of AI lies in openness. We advocate for an open future of AI, not only because of its considerable local and global economic value, but also because in-depth global cooperation, for which openness has always been and always will be necessary. Local and global. Remember that? You know, as I was talking about William Roberts, become vocal local. From global to local to global, for a twist on that phrase. Furthermore, it is a prerequisite for the urgently needed, quote, national institutions and international governance to enforce standards preventing recklessness and misuse, close quote, by rapidly progressing frontier AI. Read an article co-authored by Zhu and other Chinese experts published in Science in October 2025. A solution that simultaneously promotes openness and innovation. For AI can act as the most workable lowest common denominator for the global AI governance dialogue. In the meantime, China's AI regulation system, especially legislation on the healthy development of AI, and who defines that? No, not the Rock Group and our little people of Whoville or the World Health Organization. This stuff is biased. Who defines the healthy AI development? Legislation on the healthy development of AI will become better balanced globally, inclusive, and future-proof by incorporating more ideas from international stakeholders in China and international dialogue involving China, Chinese experts said in the article. Doesn't sound any different than any climate change subversive or sustainable development parrot I've ever heard currently in the United States government, state governments, or university system here right now and before now, as you've been told behind the woodshed for over a decade. Today, leveraging the systematic capabilities of Science 100, large models across 8 major scientific disciplines have already been deployed on the front lines of research, with more than 100 scenarios achieving large-scale applications across fundamental engineering, public welfare, and national strategic priorities. So that, there it is. The national security excuse, right, built into this whole system on a global governance scale. In the foreseeable future, through open sharing mechanisms, these achievements are increasingly becoming resources that benefit more countries around the world. Sort of like a drug addict giving you a little taste before you go over the deep end. What a technocratic panacea, folks. Trust the science, too, to boot. And I'll provide the article where AI has claimed to solve, the OpenAI has claimed to solve an 80-year-old math problem, and it was done in real time. OpenAI claims, again, the private company is claiming, but later on we'll hear that the mathematicians are looking at it right now, and they haven't found a fault yet. OpenAI claims its new reasoning model has produced an original mathematical proof disproving a famous unresolved conjecture in geometry, which was first posed by Paul Erdos in 1946. If this sounds familiar to you, it's because this isn't the first time OpenAI has made such a bold claim. Now, I hadn't heard of it, but maybe you did, so I just leave that in the story. 7 months ago, the AI giant's former VP Kevin Weil posted on X, quote, GPT-5 found solutions to 10 previously unsolved Erdos problems and made progress on 11 others, close quote. It turns out GPT didn't actually solve those problems. It just found solutions that already existed in the literature. Again, pattern analysis and application. Taunts from rivals like Jan LeCun and Google DeepMind CEO Demis Hassabis followed, and Weil promptly took down his premature post. Today, at least, it seems, OpenAI didn't make the same mistake twice. Alongside the announcement, the company published companion remarks in support of the disproof from mathematician Noga Alon, Melanie Wood, and Thomas Bloom, who maintains that Erdos Problems website and previously called Weil's post, quote, a dramatic misrepresentation, close quote. Quote, for nearly 80 years, mathematicians believed the best possible solution looked roughly like square grids. OpenAI posted on X, an open AI model has now disproved that belief, discovering an entirely new family of constructions that perform better, close quote. The company said this marks, quote, the first time AI has autonomously solved a prominent open problem central to the field of mathematics, close quote. The proof for OpenAI came from a new general purpose reasoning model, not a system specifically designed to solve math problems or even this problem in particular. And I want to put this up against what China just said, that they designed specific science, specific models. So there's still room here. But OpenAI says this is significant because it means AI systems are now more capable of holding together long, difficult chains of reasoning and connecting ideas across fields in ways researchers may not have previously explored. And this is a problem of specialty and specialization that I was coming up. That's what they were telling us as a technology, as a technologist. The specialization was actually going to hurt us. The AI in this instance may be able to start to look across specialties and start to pull in disciplines that they hadn't been, that would normally stay apart. I hesitate to use the word multidisciplinary because that's sustainable development, but it goes across disciplines, and it doesn't worry about whether it's within the constraints of any particular discipline if it can be applied. The implications for biology, physics, and engineering and medicine are now expanded with this, that AI is helping us to more fully explore the cathedral of mathematics we have built over the centuries, quote, quote, Bloom said in a statement. What other unseen wonders are waiting in the wings? And that's where I sit, right there. What's out there that you just have something that can keep track of the details, maybe something none of us observe the pattern to, and a machine can actually put that pattern recognition together and give you something. How cool is that? Again, it's just a machine that's performing a certain task. Looks like magic. In fact, the scientists are saying it's magic. The programmers, it's a black box. But if it can come out with things that are objectively right, who cares? And there has apparently been some independent tracking, as I said, mathematicians already jumping in. And this is holding itself up so far. Very cool stuff that someone might now be able to take and make something never thought of previously with it. Have this machine, this computer running analyses that going cross disciplines to find certain answers. This is my mind, it's like the wow factor. Like I said before, I talked about a long time ago with Gary L. So we need a database. We're looking at the sun. We're looking at all these theories. We're looking at solar system. Just natural science and the way the earth, the natural things, resonances, frequencies, all these things. We need a big database. We need to be able to have a search engine that goes through a database. Well, here it is. We're starting to get that just now. It's only been 10 years, I think, since I talked to him about that. Neither one of us, I think, are capable of pulling this together, but that was the thought. I've always wanted a big database that I could work through and come up with things. You have hunches sometimes. You see things that you can't quite put your finger on. You don't have quite the knowledge that you need. You don't quite have all of that you need. And a tool like this could do that. As I've said, once you understand the limitation, as we saw before, 4,000 chemicals got thrown into an AI and 15 molecule combinations came out to be supposed medicines or something like that. And one was really only viable. So you have that problem. But to take the universe of knowledge and put it down to 4,000 and then to 15 or 20 and then down to one, you couldn't do that before. And it can be done in weeks now instead of, I'm talking big stuff, weeks instead of years and years and years and a whole team. So I think this is fascinating stuff. I'm not too much about the OpenAI making the claims, but if someone independently checks it, as I said, AI can't work on itself. It's error prone. But you get something that works on objective basis and it checks out, why aren't we using it? And as I said, the report, and I can't remember now where it was, that AI designed a brand new jet engine, a rocket engine, and it designed it and it built it. It was able to run the machines to build it, and it worked. It ran right off the first time. So AI's a rocket scientist? Well, not really, but I guess we can call it that. So that's where the value seems to be going. But where the AI is getting that value spotlight, the plantation workers, not so much. Bank CEO calls workers low-value human capital. Standard Chartered CEO is walking back his remarks about, quote, low-value human capital, close quote, or as they prefer to be referred to, employees. Bill Winter sent a memo to bank employees after his comment that the bank would swap, quote, low-value human capital, close quote, for artificial intelligence triggered internal unease and public criticism, including from former Singaporean President Halima Yacob, who called the wording, quote, disturbing, close quote. Quote, many of you will have seen the media coverage following the investor event in Hong Kong, particularly the reporting around automation AI and workforce changes, close quote, Winters wrote. Quote, I know this may be unsettling when reduced to simple headlines or, quote, out of context, close quote. Winters stressed, but any roles that disappear will reflect, quote, changes in the work, not the value of our people, close quote. The British multinational bank, which mainly operates in Asia, plans to cut more than 50% of its support staff by 2030, about 7,800 jobs, in areas like HR and risk and compliance as it leans on AI for tasks such as screening for financial crime and tracking regulatory changes. Winter says the technology will boost profits at the bank, which employs roughly 81,000 people worldwide, plus 17,000 contractors. In a memo to staff before his talk to investors on Tuesday, Winter said the bank would try to retrain workers where possible and promised job losses would be handled with, quote, respect and care, close quote. But outrage followed his remarks to reporters that the move isn't cost-cutting, but, quote, replacing, in some cases, low-value human capital with the financial capital and the investment capital we're putting in, close quote. Frank Landymore at Futurism calls it, quote, perhaps the most strained and misanthropic euphemism, close quote, for employees in history. The Financial Times Alphaville blog, meanwhile, has started selling, quote, lower-value human capital, close quote, Merck. But euphemism? Wait until they see the definition of master-slave relationship. You heard that behind the woodshed. It's something that surprised me, and I thought people should hear about it to consider to protect themselves. The unsuspected nature of this, the people who are generally defenseless to it. Really, it just shocked me to see this, that you can be set up like this and not even know it. Exclusive luggage tag switching scheme involves flights from Canada to countries where drug smuggling can carry death penalty. CTV News Investigative Unit W5 has found at least 17 innocent passengers on flights originating in Kanukistan were detained on drug smuggling allegations over the past year after their baggage tags were switched onto suitcases filled with drugs. All were eventually released, but only after some had been handcuffed, arrested, and jailed overseas. W5 compiled the data through court records, news releases, and police sources. The cases involved flights from Canada to Dominican Republic, Paris, Germany, Morocco, Bermuda, the Philippines, and Korea, where drug smuggling can carry the death penalty. In the last year, the RCMP has arrested 6 baggage and ramp workers at Toronto Pearson International Airport in connection with the alleged bag tag switching cases. These numbers only reflect cases in which drugs were actually detected. There is no way of knowing how many passengers may have unknowingly had their names used to move drugs around the world. How bag tag switching works. The scheme is simple. A corrupt airport worker unsticks the luggage tag from an unsuspecting passenger's bag and reattaches it to a suitcase packed with drugs. At Toronto Pearson, there are 3,000 security cameras, but there are camera blind spots in restricted areas, and bag tag switch can happen in just seconds. If the drug bag makes it through undetected, someone at the destination country retrieves it. If it is intercepted, the innocent passenger whose name is on the bag is left facing the consequences. A Toronto woman is pulled off a flight in New Zealand over this. Nicole, a 35-year-old from Toronto, was traveling to Auckland, New Zealand with her family when her trip was suddenly interrupted during a layover in Vancouver. Maybe luckily here. Passengers were getting settled for a 14-hour flight when Canada Border Services Agency officers boarded the plane shortly before takeoff. Quote, I hear a man speaking in an aggressive tone, so I looked around like, what's going on? She told W5. After Nicole was marched off the plane, she was told she was being detained for transporting narcotics. How do I deny? Certified copies of border officers' notes obtained by W5 show 2 suitcases tested positive for suspected narcotics. Nicole says inside the secondary screening area, officers opened the luggage. Quote, they brought out the bolt cutters, and it is just a massive vacuum-sealed bags of pills. It was stuffed full of drugs, quote, quote. Nicole insisted the bags weren't hers, even though a bag tag with her name on it was attached to the suitcase. How do you argue that it's a tag with my name? How do I deny that it's not mine? According to the Canada Border Services report, the luggage contained 8 packages of suspected methamphetamine weighing 20.52 kilograms. That's 45 pounds. Nicole was arrested. Quote, I had to take my shoes off, she said. They cut the strings out of my pants and put me in a cell, close quote. The crumpled bag tag clue. in the cell, Nicole kept thinking about the tag. But the tag looked crumpled, but I put it in on a pristine condition. About 7 hours after the arrest, Nicole was released. While no one has explained that what cleared her, she believes the airport surveillance may have shown the bags she checked looked nothing like the drug-filled suitcases with her luggage tags. Quote, I know how lucky we were that it happened in Canada, close quote, Nicole said, but, quote, but if it had happened somewhere else, some places still have capital punishment for it, close quote. When the family eventually arrived in Auckland, their real bags, the ones whose original tags had been removed in Canada, were sitting in the unclaimed luggage area with, quote, rush tags, close quote, attached. Airport employees use rush tags for luggage that has been delayed, mishandled, or separated from its owner. Had the drug bags not been discovered in Vancouver, Nicole may never have known her name had been used to move millions of dollars worth of methamphetamine to the other side of the world. Air tags hidden inside drug bags. Nicole says tracking devices were hidden in the bags, presumably so the criminals behind the scheme could track them. But what I was told is that they will swap the tags and they'll intercept the bag with the drugs in them. You get to the destination, they can pick up your bag and not know that anything has happened, actually. And so it happens more than you know, and it's just not necessarily caught, she said. Canadians jailed in Dominican Republic. Three Canadians on vacation in Dominican Republic were jailed after a bag tag switching case in Toronto Pearson Airport linked them to suitcases filled with drugs. Now, the article explains more, and it's in four parts. It's quite extensive. But this website was not very friendly. And this is where I switched from the original site to the rest of the story, at least the part that I wanted to talk more about. Like, what do you do about this attack? Now, how can you kind of protect yourself? While there's no foolproof way here, there is some steps for flying with more peace of mind. You take photos and videos of the bag at the check-in counter, specifically showing the bag tag attached with readable information for comparison. You make sure the bag tag is attached securely. For extra caution, they suggest bring a mini stapler to staple the tag. They're going to be held like TSA or something, or, you know, attack somebody. Maybe, I don't know. Bring the mini stapler to staple the tag closed, making it harder to remove and reattach to other suitcases. Take a photo or video of the bag being weighed at the check-in. This can help in case anything is added to a bag without the owner's knowledge. Hold on to the baggage receipt that peels off the tag before being attached. Don't check a bag at all would be another answer. A carry-on won't be targeted, and this also helps passengers avoid airline baggage fees. Others pointed out that airport workers sneaking an illicit bag exposes to the massive security concerns that are there then when they can do this. If they can get a suitcase of drugs into the airport in the first place, what's to stop them from smuggling in the bombs or other weapons? So now that you know, it could happen anywhere, I suppose. What gets me is I read in another site about this article that RCMP says it takes responsibility at Pearson Airport for drug smuggling. But this still happens? How? Why? Corrupt, no doubt. But be careful out there. This has been BTWRLM 669, and I'll be with you next week. Tech diffs or nature willing.
Echoes call, the hour is near. Behind the woodshed, the truth you'll hear. Every Sunday, the clock strikes three. Hal's voice rolls like thunder, fierce and free. Pull up a chair, lean in close, lessons to learn. Dose by dose, behind the woodshed, no stone unturned. Hal's words ignite, the airwaves burn. Stand up, listen, it's time to learn. Behind the woodshed, where truths are earned. From law to liberty, the spectrum wide, in Hal's court, no place to hide, a cantaloupe fast, ready to burst for unspoken truths and unquenchable thirst. Behind the woodshed, no stone unturned. Hal's words ignite, the airwaves burn. Stand up, listen, it's time to learn. Behind the woodshed, where truths are earned.
life the truth.
Next week, heed the call. Behind the woodshed, standing tall.